Welcome back to The Roundtable. I'm Ian Pickus. The holiday might be called President's Day, but as historians and contemporary White House watchers know, first ladies often play a major role in any administration, aside from their ceremonial duties. Some, like Eleanor Roosevelt and Hillary Clinton, were outsized political forces in their own right, while the influence of others, like Edith Wilson, is only revealed years later. In partnership with the White House Historical Association, C-SPAN has launched a new year-long series examining each of the nation's first ladies, from Martha Washington through Michelle Obama, called First Ladies, Influence, and Image. The 35-part series is produced by Mark Farkas, executive producer of C-SPAN's White House Week, and he joins us now. Welcome to the Roundtable.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
So as you were gathering all of these stories, what threads did you notice that the first ladies have in common?
Well, you know, we think of first ladies having causes, and we think it's a fairly recent phenomenon. You know, we take a look at Mrs. Obama's anti-obesity campaign and Lady Bird Johnson's, you know, beautification efforts. But really, if you go all the way back to Abigail Adams, she is very forcefully writing letters to her husband. You know, basically, I'm paraphrasing, but says, don't forget the ladies. And actually, one of the quotes from her, one of her letters is, if you don't pay attention, we will foment a rebellion. So it may not have been in the press, but throughout history, these first ladies have really lobbied their husband for causes. And, you know, the other thread is, you know, in the tagline of the series, it's influence and image. And, they, you know, so many of them have had a great influence not only on policy, but also on their husband's political careers, pushing them to where they got to.
Certainly, in maybe the past 50 years or so, the idea of what a first lady is supposed to do has changed. But I think Americans have an image of what first ladies are traditionally known to do and the jobs that they have and the role they play. So are there actually written rules of what a first lady is expected to do in the White House, or does that all come down from tradition?
Well, there are traditions at the White House, and I know that there are, you know, there's protocol, obviously, when you're dealing with, you know, entertaining, you know, foreign dignitaries and other folks. And so whether there's written rules, you know, that is going to be an interesting thing for us to ask the historians. But again, there's been protocol over the years. But it's interesting, you know, this idea of them entertaining. It's a dual purpose. You know, one, it is to welcome the people into the White House and the dignitaries. But you can go back to Dolly Madison, who's throwing, you know, she's having these receptions several times a week in what today is the Red Room of the White House. Back then it was the Yellow Room. And outwardly, you know, these are social affairs. But really what she's doing is she's doing the politicking for her husband, who's over, you know, she's a very outgoing first lady, and her husband is an introvert compared to her. So she's actually doing some of his politicking for him. And as they make their way from the Red Room, where they met with Dolly, over to the Blue Room, where James Madison is, she's, you know, she's brought people together. And so it's not a, you know, the phenomenon is really interesting. There's much more, especially in the 19th century, there's much more to the entertaining than there is today.
Well, you've taken us to the 19th century. I want to ask about James Buchanan, who famously did not have a wife while in office, but delegated, I think, a niece to become the first lady. What were those roles and how did she take to the job?
Well, Harriet Lane is his niece, and you're right, he's the only bachelor president that we've had. But she's very close to him. She loses her parents very early on, and so, you know, really it's like a father-daughter relationship. And so she takes to it very well. I mean, she's a really interesting character in our series. She's very into the arts, and she actually, not many people would have put the time and the effort into a James Buchanan memorial because he's not looked upon as a very, you know, successful American president. But here in Washington, D.C., there is a monument to James Buchanan, and that's all due to Harriet Lane. So she takes to the hostessing, you know, just like a first lady would have.
What were some of the things that surprised you about the role of the first lady or specific first lady lives as you were working on this project?
Well, there's some real characters, and I mean, I think that's one of the interesting things, and so many of them are just names that have been lost to history, but you think of someone like Julia Tyler. John Tyler's first wife dies about a year into office, and there's a very sort of overnight romance that takes place between John Tyler, who's 54, and Julia Tyler, Julia Gardner, who's from New York, who's 23, and they go up actually to New York City and secretly get married, and do not tell John Tyler's first set of kids. She comes into the White House. She's been to Europe. She starts doing, you know, there's lots of entertaining, which is Letitia Tyler had not done. She's dancing waltzes in the White House, which was scandalous during that time. And she's also the first lady who sets the precedent of Hail to the Chief being played when the president comes into the room. So she's an example of a very interesting character who I don't think people really know about very much. And then there's someone like Lucy Hayes, who's our first college-educated first lady, and this is 1877. And you start to think about, okay, what is going on in the country with women at this time? And, you know, how many of them are getting college educations at this point? And you also think of the Hayes-Tilden election. You think of Bush v. Gore divided the country. Well, the Hayes-Tilden election is thrown into the House of Representatives, and he comes in, and the country is divided. But Lucy Hayes very quickly becomes a very popular first lady and takes the edge off of, you know, the antipathy toward Rutherford B. Hayes, her husband.
Is this Lemonade Lucy?
This is Lemonade Lucy, and she's known as Lemonade Lucy for, you know, she's associated with the temperance movement, and it's her and her husband who ban alcohol from the White House, but it's only after there's the Russians are invited to the White House, and they drink quite a bit. Things get out of hand, and so from that point on, they've banned alcohol at the White House, but she's so much more than that. You know, the temperance movement, again, it's a window into the time period, the temperance movement and the women's suffrage movement, there's a lot of intersections between those two. So Lucy Hayes is asked to speak at a women's suffrage event. Now, you get, again, this is in 1877 to 1881. Women do not have the right to vote till 1920. And so this is a movement that's been going on. But instead of speaking at the event like she was asked to do, which would have ruffled a lot of feathers and really injured, you know, and potentially done some damage to her husband's presidency, which is already, you know, as I mentioned, on thin ice with the public, she doesn't speak at the event, but she attends the event, which to me says a lot. But again, it's you know, she's a lot more than just Lemonade Lucy.
What can you tell us about Hannah Van Buren? Of course, the Van Buren site is near to the station, and I think she's one of those first ladies, if you have a general knowledge about the White House, maybe your mind just skips over.
Well, yeah, Kinderhook, is the Van Buren family home. And, you know, Hannah Van Buren is not an official first lady because she has died before Martin Van Buren comes into office. But it begats a very interesting story because he goes into the White House. He does not have anyone to really do the hostessing duties. Well, in steps Dolly Madison, who comes back to Washington after her time as first lady, and she's sort of this grand dame of Washington society. She actually introduces Van Buren's son to Angelica Singleton, and the two of them get married. So she's arranged the marriage, and all of a sudden Angelica Singleton Van Buren takes over the duties of the White House hostessing. So it's very interesting. There's these intersections of first ladies throughout the series that I think people will find interesting as well.
Now, it's a year-long series, of course, and it wraps up next year with Michelle Obama. I wanted to ask you about how she sees her role in the context of being in the long line of these first ladies and how much the history of what other first ladies have done weighs on her in your perspective.
We did an interview with her, and in the interview, she talks about you've got to bring Michelle Obama to it, but keeping in mind the traditions that the women have played. And then she talked about the first ladies that she looks back to for advice and to learn from. And these are more the modern first ladies. She'd interacted with Lady Bird Johnson, but it's interesting. You know, she mentions the modern first ladies, and there was no distinction between political party. This is a very small sorority of people who have done the job. And so, you know, I think she looks back to the more modern first ladies to get guidance and brings a little bit of Michelle Obama to it as well.
Many of the women in the higher floors on the state floor, they seem like characters from a wonderful story because it was such a long time ago. It's history, and you read about it in books. To be in their presence seems a little disconnected. But the first ladies on the ground floor, the ones that I remember, their real stories and their real, I can picture their lives in an incredible way that makes me think about their challenges and struggles.
She's got the extra challenge that some first ladies have and others don't of having, you know, raising children in the White House. And to me, that's one of the interesting themes throughout the series is that, you know, it's very hard for us to identify with the decisions that a president makes and what their job is like, because it's, you know, it's so different from any of ours. But the family life in the White House is a fascinating aspect to each one of these first ladies, and they're really the ones who are dealing with the, you know, with issues of loss, with you know, frankly, there's dysfunction from time to time over the course of American history in White House families. And you look at what's, you know, you look at a, you know, why are reality TV shows so popular now? You take either rich or famous people, and you know what that breeds, you throw them together inside a bubble of some type, and dysfunction happens. And so I think you find that obviously throughout the course of American history. You take a look at the Lincolns, obviously there's loss, there's hardship, and you know, it really, a lot of this falls on the First Lady much more than it does the President.
First Lady's Influence and Image airs Mondays at 9 o'clock on C-SPAN, and you can learn more about live streaming at cspan.org. We've been speaking with Mark Farkas, the producer of this special series, which will continue for a year. And Mark, thank you so much for taking a few minutes to talk to us about the First Ladies.
Thank you very much, Ian. Appreciate it.
And you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.